And if you can't support, at least don't block. Let climate justice activists do the work for you, because the globe is our globe and it's one globe.
Well, we are facing a very serious civil war right now. It has been more than 70 years already, but from 2021 February onwards, we have currently having the Spring Revolution. It is a hybrid revolution, peaceful protest and the armed resistance. So the vivid fighting, battling, it's pretty much impacting on the climate, because the military is using airstrikes, sometimes directly on the refugee camps, the internally displaced people's camp, and they also do arson. Sometimes they burn people alive. So this kind of severe humanitarian violations making so much impact right now.
Permafrost is melting in Russia. 60% of Russia is Arctic zone, so that means more like climate crisis is happening in Russia like 2.5 times faster than in a global. Yeah, so permafrost is melting in Russia. Doesn't have any adaptation plans to climate crisis. So in a few years, like, we will have more and more catastrophes in Russia connected to the climate crisis. Russian government, they don't have any plans to do something about it, because all the money they are going to the war and to destroy the nation, not to adapt to what is happening.
My name is Sarah Schurmann. I'm a climate journalist from Germany. And today we want to talk about the climate crisis and climate justice. And with these five really, really interesting people who do amazing work. And actually, I would love to talk to each of them for 1 hour straight. But we're having 1 hour all together, and we're trying to give you a short overview over the situations in the different countries where our panelists come from and how they see the possibilities of protest and change for climate action. And we're going to start with the two climate activists here. So we have Arshak Makishyan. He's probably the most famous climate protester from Russia. And we do have Tobias Merz. He's a member of the climate protest group Just Last Generation in Germany. And we also afterwards going to talk to the authors from the Writers in Exile program. So I'd like to welcome Matida. She's a human rights activist, a surgeon, and a writer from Myanmar. And she was involved in the political campaign during the 1990s general election in Myanmar. And this also led her to writing her first book, The Sunflower, that was banned just shortly after. And she was sentenced to 20 years in prison in 2094 and was also imprisoned in really, really harsh conditions for almost 6 years. And yeah, today we're going to talk to her about the situation in Myanmar and how protests might be possible there. And afterwards, welcome to Stella Nyanzi. She's from Uganda, and she worked as a medical anthropologist, an academic, and writer, and an activist. And she spent 16 months in prison after writing and posting a poem online in which she criticized Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. And I could probably just like talk for 1 hour straight about what she does and what she already did, like for all the people sitting on stage here. But amongst others, she used her voice to support women's rights on sexual health service, girls' rights to access affordable menstrual hygiene products so they won't miss school. And also the LGBTIQA plus people's rights in times of escalating homophobic legislation. And also there we want to talk about how's the situation for protests in Uganda and how's the situation for climate action there. And at the end, we're going to talk to Shebal Chenyot Arinli. She's a journalist, documentary filmmaker, and also producer from Turkey. And she also was Turkey's first female cinematographer. And she works on issues such as minority rights, the Kurdish conflict, the fight for women's rights, or she also works on the development of alternative ecological models for life. These are all the areas which she works in. So much for all the interesting people on the panel. And my first question goes to you, Ashak. For 40 weeks, starting in March 2019, you protested alone on Pushkin Square in Moscow and did this for climate action. You've been arrested several times. And in March 2020, you fled to Berlin after also protesting against the war in Ukraine. And in the meantime, Russia has revoked the citizenship of you and your family. Considering all this, like, how do you see the situation for protests in Russia right now?
We activists in exile, we're trying to organize a new movement, support people who still do some activism in Russia in very, very difficult situation because Russia was an authoritarian regime. Now Russia is a dictatorship, and for example, like depriving my family citizenship and deporting them, it was an instrument of terror, like same instruments were used during other dictatorships. And so the situation now is much more difficult and different for activists. We're trying to find new strategies, and there are like more radical activists now, probably openly opposing the government is not effective anymore. And yeah, a lot of people are asking us why we're not you more radical. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, but I was quite radical, honestly. I was protesting a lot. I was peacefully protesting, not breaking real laws, but yeah. So yeah, there are a lot of questions, and we could have been more radical, but now we have what we have, and we try to continue and try to find new ways.
You said, like, when we talked before, that, like, protesting on the ground is not effective anymore because
you're just going
to be arrested, right?
It's effective if you do it secretly, and if you are kind of doing this partisanship work when you, do less, illegal things. Not legal things, actually.
And you said also that, like, one of these new strategies is doing protest and awareness work online. But this still works in Russia, or how does it work?
For example, here we have poets and writers, and they do their work by writing something important that influences a lot of people. So we still have these kind of instruments. We can have interviews. We still have independent media, and most of them, they still work. In Russia, for Russia now, some of the journalists are living in exile as well. So there are a lot of instruments, but probably, people in exile, they need more support and help and understanding because the situation for Russian people, Russian activists is getting worse and worse by every day. Sometimes they even try to poison journalists and activists in exile. For example, a journalist was poisoned in Germany recently. Yeah, so it's not that easy, but we're trying to continue to do our work.
And what would you say in Russia, like in this multi-crisis situation that we're in, how is the landscape of protests developing?
Probably now we have more environmental protests than political protests because environmental crisis, it's a thing that you can see from your window. Yeah, for most of the people in Russia, it's obvious, not from Moscow, St. Petersburg or privileged cities, that environmental crisis is happening, climate crisis is happening. So I think in the future there will be more protests about environment because the Russian government can do just one thing, to destroy environment, to sell everything abroad. And yeah, so I think we need to continue to do a kind of anti-war environmental activism. And it's a thing we need to oppose Russian propaganda in these topics because Russian propaganda is doing a lot of work to say, oh, we are environmentally friendly country. We have a lot of forests and stuff like that, but it's not true. They are destroying nature, and if you would travel in Russia, you would see it. And I think it's very important to support these protests and these people who still do some things to protect the nature in Russia, because nature in Russia is something worth to protect. It's the nation Russia is not responsible for this terrible war, and Russia is the biggest country in the world. We have a lot of important lakes, parks, and yeah, of course, these environmental topics, we can use them to raise awareness about political crisis as well.
Maybe you could elaborate on like what's the biggest climate issue, climate challenge that you see in Russia right now, and how are the reactions in Russia? Are there any?
Permafrost is melting in Russia. 60% of Russia is Arctic zone, so that means more like climate crisis is happening in Russia like 2.5 times faster than in a global. Yeah, so permafrost is melting in Russia. Doesn't have any adaptation plans to climate crisis. So in a few years, like we will have more and more catastrophes in Russia connected to the climate crisis. Russian government, they don't have any plans to do something about it, because all the money they are going to the war and to destroy the nature, not to adapt to what is happening because of climate crisis. So yeah, the situation is actually terrible, and we need to do more work about it to stop the regime, because without systematic change in Russia, without political change in Russia, it would be impossible to fight against climate crisis. And it's very important to have Russia on board when you're fighting climate crisis, because Russia is on the first place in potential in renewable energy and also Russia can play important role in fighting climate crisis, because they have a lot of water, they have everything to which we need in times of this a lot of crisis. But for that, we need to support Ukraine, support Russian anti-war movement, and have regime changes in Russia. And we still have a lot of work to do for that.
Yeah, and maybe like one very last and broad question that maybe you could just like answer very shortly. Like, how do you see the changes of political change in Russia?
I think it's going to be much worse before it starts to change. Much, much worse.
Okay, thank you. The next one is Tobias Merz. You're, as I said, involved with the Last Generation, and also in Germany. I mean, I won't compare the pressure on German activists to any that anyone on the panel here lived through, but what options do you see so we can really move into the direction of political and societal change that we need in terms of the climate crisis?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yes, I'm Tobias Merz from Letzte Generation, Last Generation, and before answering your question, I would like to express my respect and thanks for all of you, also yourself, what you are doing, and from listening that you guys are going to prison for what you're doing, or being expelled from your country, being separated from your family. It's much more that you're enduring than what we are doing in Germany at Last Generation, also myself. So thank you very much for your work and commitment, I want to say. No, really, I think we're very privileged in that sense in Germany, that even if we go to the streets and if we do things that are, breaking some rules, there's some law and order, you can say.
I really understand it, because while I prepared that panel, I was really wanting to read all this up, and I wasn't just saying, like, I want to talk to you for an hour. I really want to, because it's so, so important. So thanks for saying that again.
Yeah. Okay, so coming to your question of what can be done and what can be done specifically in Germany, for me, it's important time and again to remind myself of the special situation in time in history that we are in right now. That is, we are about to destroy our human civilization, right? So in the past, we also had civilizations that have lasted for some time and then went down and disappeared from the earth. But this time, we are a global civilization. So if we disappear, it will be all of us. I mean, some humans might survive, but we are in danger of losing the whole civilization as we know it, and most people's lives today on Earth, right, with huge human suffering. So in this very specific situation, normally you would expect the governments to take action to protect the people and come up with a plan. And many countries have their own issues and have difficulties for corruption and many issues that they are not able to move as they could. But Germany, being a rich country and being well-equipped and a liberal country, we should definitely have a plan and definitely step up to our responsibility. And now we have a government in Germany who is not stepping up to that responsibility. Like, we have the plans that the government has are not sufficient, and even those plans we are not meeting. Just in August there was an experts council by the government who said you're not fulfilling your targets and the targets are too low, and the government just says okay and just goes on.
And it's not even such a big issue in the media, right? So it's really, really interesting how nobody seems to be interested in that.
Exactly. So we are in this world dangerous situation, and a government like Germany not having a plan, it's really special. And I mean, according to our founding laws, the constitution, the government is in the responsibility to take care of the future generation, right? We have to take care of our foundation of our living. But still, it's hard to take them to court and have them act. So what can we do? We have very little time. That's what the recent climate report says. We have this decade, practically, until 2030. What can we do? And one thing that has come out in history to when there's big injustice in a society that has to be addressed, something that can sometimes bring a quick change is civil disobedience and civil resistance. And I'm curious whether we'll talk about that more when it's your turn. And that is what we at La Sexta Generación are doing, that we are going to the streets and resisting against the government not doing its jobs. So we say we do civil resistance, we break certain, let's say, rules or commitments that we have together in order to tell that the government is not living up to its responsibility. And in the past, with Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King, these kind of civil resistance, civil disobedience, sometimes has led to very quick change that we need now. So that is what we are trying to do.
Yeah. If we would have more time, I would also question you on like how effective the strategy is right now and how could it be better and so on. But for now, I'd like to ask you another question, because you actually have been working in climate quite long. You're a consultant for solar energy, worked, for example, in countries like Bangladesh. But you only got involved in protests like this pretty lately. So maybe you could tell us on your way into protests and why you decided to go this way.
Yeah, so I had, two eye-opening moments in my life. And one was when I was studying at like 20 years ago. And during my studies, I studied electrical engineering, and I met Hartmut Grassel. I don't know if somebody of you remember. It was before Schellnhuber. He was the most famous climate scientist in Germany. And we had an interaction, and at that point I was realizing, wow, this climate crisis is much worse than I had anticipated until that moment. So I said, let me go into solar power, let me build solar panels and, have this energy transition, then we can handle with the climate crisis. That was my plan. So I went to solar power. As you said, I'm doing solar power consultancies since 15 years now in countries like Bangladesh, Pakistan, trying to, bring more solar power into the world, help to bring forward this energy transition. And 2 years back, I had another eye-opening moment where maybe some of you remember that these weather extremes that we had this summer as well, they were coming 2 years back, they were coming more to Europe, that Southern Europe burning all the time. My wife is from Spain, so the forest they were burning, all kinds of devastation. And so it was becoming clearer. The climate crisis in the past, it was something like, well, later on this century we will have to deal with that. But now it's here. It's now. And we have to deal with it now. And it's going to get worse year by year. So that was one thing. And then also interaction with some people, especially one lady in Bangladesh, very committed person. I realized people are suffering from this now. And it's my responsibility, being a citizen of a privileged part of the world, whether they will have a future or not. So I realized just building solar panels is not enough. We need this transition now, and we need much more, and only the governments can do it. So we as the civil society, we have a responsibility. And I have two kids also, two daughters. I want them to have a future. I want to do something that works now, that addresses this issue addresses the government, but in a non-violent way. And this is how I came to Letzte Generation.
Thank you. Yeah, I find it really interesting because I can see that it's the same for many people, like also people really working in on the ecological crisis, on the climate crisis, just like becoming more and more aware how severe this crisis is. And this is like a perfect way also to relate to you, Mathilde. Since the coup d'etat in 2021 in Myanmar, there's a civil war. So what's the situation right now? Like, is climate a topic at all? Or yeah, where are you at?
Well, we are facing a very serious civil war right now. It has been more than 70 years already, but from 2021 February onwards, we have currently having the Spring Revolution. It is a hybrid revolution, peaceful protest and the armed resistance. So the vivid fighting, battling, it's pretty much impacting on the climate because the military is using airstrikes, sometimes directly on the refugee camps, the internally displaced people's camp, and they also do arson. Sometimes they burn people alive. So this kind of severe humanitarian violations making so much impact right now. But sadly enough, some powerful industrialized countries are backing up our military, for example, Russia, something like that. So on top of that, you know, the resources throughout these last 20, 30 years, the military has been doing deep deforestations for having their income, and then also some natural resources like rare earth. Rare earth is very important for our digital devices, and since we are very rich, so the Chinese company taking rare earth from us, something like that. So we are having such a big difficult situation in terms of geography. We are in between China and India, and also having this kind of the very stupid militant military regime right now. So all these making us in very difficult situation, and it's very rare chance to even voice out about the climate change right now. Any kind of protest cannot be done without the help of the armed resistance group guarding the protest. Without that, we cannot do anything.
Yeah, and you said, like, okay, the regime doesn't want any awareness, but also, like, after the coup d'etat, there is not much room for protests, but there are floods, for example, and there are already, like, severe climate impacts that the population is facing. And maybe you could also describe this, because you told me that, like, the government is not doing anything to help people on the ground.
Well, I don't want to say government, as military is not the government right now. You know, they deliberately took the power without having any legitimacy. So recently we do have a big flood in very near to the former capital city, the Bago is a small little town, and there was no early warning, no rescue strategy, nothing, you know. So people just dying and losing their properties. And at the same time, when we having a big flood in this small little city, they make the big airstrikes in northern part of the country, and it kill at least 24 small little kids. So that's how the military has been doing right now. That's why it's nobody accept them as the government. Their intention is not to taking care of any citizens. They even doing all these bad things to the citizens.
Yeah, and you said that there's also no room for protests, and you can't even voice some critical things here. But in the past, you talked about how literature can play a role in protests, and how literature can also be a form of protest and help those protests. So which kind of role do you see for literature here?
Well, you know, we do have a 5-decade-long censorship and 5-decade-long very heavy propaganda machine. And the education system is effectively ineffective, I might say. So you can imagine the intellectual blindness is in my society is very, very serious problem. So even with that, we always use literature and arts as a weapon to make our resistance, to make our voice out. And our readership and our audience are very good at imaginative power. So we use the so many creative ways to talk about between the lines, beyond the text, and our audience and readerships come along with it. And with that, we can expand the role of the citizenship. That's why in the past 5 years, Dom, I think people believe in their role as citizens. For that reason, right now, after the coup in 2021, people giving the big message, without our will, nobody can govern us. So that's how the resistance is going on. It's almost 1,000 days already. Every single day, we do have an armed resistance plus the peaceful protest, not on the ground, but through the digital format. You know, so the diaspora Burmese all over the world also contribute a lot, together with the group on the ground. So this is how, and then through the literature, through some other advanced technological things like the apps, we trying to keep the momentum, we trying to keep the resistance. But at the same time, we also talk about the other issues like the environment issue and some other gender issue also. You know, yeah. At the same time, we just resisting the military regime. Yeah.
Yeah. And like concerning the climate crisis, would you say that authors also do have some kind of responsibility to raise their voices here and raise awareness?
Oh, sure. Yeah. In the past, I think I'm really grateful to our earlier writers, senior writers. They have been writing a lot about the nature. I think this is in the days of the digital war. Very few writers focus on this kind of the elaborating and talking a lot about the nature. But our earlier senior writers, they have been writing a lot about this. This also helping the audience, the younger generation and the audience, to connect it to the nature and appreciate and then notice about what's going on, having the climate change, having effectively changed their life at the present or for the future. So that's why there will be the role, you know, we as artists and the literary artists or the writers, we can still educate or promote or protect.
Yeah, thank you very much. I also do think that literature is really, really important here because, as we already heard, like people already working in this field need more maybe to connect also to emotions, to feelings, to understand it on a different level. And also in literature, you do have more the chance to, it's very complex, right? To have a look at all these different issues and so on. Some time span that you maybe won't have through the digital devices who are good on another level, but not the same probably.
Sure, definitely. I think the facts and figures can tell the seriousness, but if we really truly need to understand the depth of the situations, there is a role of the storytelling, there is a role of the literature.
Yeah. Thank you, Mathilda. So, Stella, like, what's the situation in Uganda, like concerning climate impacts, but also about the political awareness and in the society?
Right. So thank you very much. I am from Uganda, which is in East Africa. Many people wonder what Africa is like. We're 54 countries to begin with. So there are different sort of climate justice issues in my country. We live in a dictatorship. We may not be having civil war like Russia and Myanmar, but we have a 36-year-old dictator who does not allow protests. So it sounds very much like Myanmar and Russia.
political and civil rights protesters, climate justice protesters, women rights protesters, any sorts of protesters are arrested by the police. There's been closure of the streets. The sort of police treatment is violent. Often the arrested protesters are not allowed to be, not taken to court for trial. And a lot of what has been happening is political awareness raising is much more urgent than even climate justice. Climate justice issues tend to be very elitist, very westernized, full of science, and the language of environmental scientists, climate justice scientists, often do not reach the hearts of everyday Ugandans who live with the burden of the climate crisis. I think one of the biggest problems comes from that climate education has not been done well enough by those of us in the climate justice movement. Very similar to the arts being an important role, I think that earth, wind, fire, and water are very spiritual. We worship the god of the sun, the god of light, the god of water. And a way of easily translating our climate justice issues to the hearts of the people is to go back to this everyday relevance and reverence of the sun, water, what's happening with the rains, our forests. And I think translation, therefore, from the hardcore science to everyday spirituality and living makes the climate crisis much more important. So where protests may not be possible because they're dangerous, we get arrested, we get taken away to jails where we rot for a long time and no one may ever take us to court to get a trial, one of the ways that we need to rethink perhaps in dangerous communities is to think about environmental education. And that's a form of resistance, bringing knowledge closer to the people, making it relevant. And I think that one of the things that's happening in Uganda is it's become very much a youthful movement. People in schools and universities, the younger generation seem to be leading the climate crisis and the justice movement for climate and environment. And I think in Uganda that they're together, the climate justice movement and the environmental and ecological justice movement work hand in hand. But it's dangerous in dictatorships to speak out. You know, speaking about everyday things like women rights, the right to life, the right to express oneself is dangerous. So climate justice, I think, as well falls under the same terrain of danger.
Well, yeah, you described a lot of problems, but maybe also some ways out, mm-hmm. as to say, okay, there are connections and there are ways to tell the climate crisis, the ecological crisis in different ways to reach the audience in Uganda, but maybe also the audience here, because for me, this was also something that I just started to understand during the last years, that I really read up more about like other wisdoms and like the understanding of how we are living with nature and not just from nature. Also, this is going something we're going to talk about, but how do you see the chance to change?
Change is inevitable.
Yeah.
I think one of the things we heard from Germany is the crisis is here. We have a decade. If we don't change, we'll extinguish ourselves as humans. And I think for me, part of the urgency for the work that I do comes from, again, having a responsibility to my children. He has two. I have three. They're teenagers. They're at the forefront. It's dangerous, but just trying to relate every day and instill hope. I think in Germany, I was attending protests in München, and they have omas and opas and working together with younger people in Fridays for Future, for example. And I think for me, that transgenerational, moving beyond generations sort of thinking is important for us to forge a way forward. In order to make these changes, I agree on pushing our governments. My government is a dictatorship. And while we are fighting to gain a democracy, part of the agenda for us is to push our governments to make these systemic changes. And I think in Uganda, the most urgent one is moving from fossil fuels, because we've discovered oil and gas, and we have the East African crude oil pipeline, ECOP, where foreign investors from Europe,
yes,
Total, I want to name and shame Total, the gas and oil producer, who come and steal our land from the poor people, grab mass lands in collaboration with the dictatorship in Uganda to discover, drill, and distribute oil for profits. And many times they're focusing on profits more than people's lives and the livelihoods of everyday Ugandans. So I think for me, the politicization of this extractive industry must be challenged. And so it's important that we continue pushing our governments even when they beat us. Even from exile, we must keep working. Even when we can't work on the streets, online we can work. When online work fails, we write books and we go to the press media and we come to book fairs and we call people to join the struggle for climate justice. Because even when it's bleak and dark, I think rays of light, we become little rays of light.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely, thanks. And it's not just a transgenerational problem, but it's also like the climate crisis is a global problem, but the responsibilities are unevenly distributed. So how do you see the role of the global north here?
Right, so I come from the global south. I'm an African. I'm not in the global north. I'm just visiting here as an exile. I think part of what is important is whether it's global north or global south, it's one globe. One globe, and we have a responsibility, those of us in the global south, first of all, to say we emit the least compared to the north. We emit the least emissions, but we pay the biggest responsibility in terms of the brunt of the problem of the climate crisis. The global north, first of all, the science, the rationality and rationale and experiments have been done in the global north. The story has been told. He said to us in Russia, you look outside and you see the effects, okay? I think part of the consciousness raising and breaking down the science, that responsibility is going to come from you in the global north. Rich governments in Germany, in Europe, in the UK, in North America, in Canada, do the work. Do the work, take responsibility. I would call on the global north. There are all these peace, there are all these climate justice international agreements that are being signed, and many times we see either the passive withdrawal or impartiality of the global north. I think take action. And then I think where, for example, Germany has been called out, thank you very much. You have the policies, you have the agenda, and you're doing nothing as governments. Wake up and do something. And I think the other thing is to work in solidarity with the global south, whether it's Africa, Asia, Latin America. Work with the global south to clean up the myths that the global north is doing on the globe. It is one globe, whether north or south, it's one globe. And what happens in the south or the north will affect all of humanity at the end of the day. So I'm speaking like an activist. I think I want to call out the global north, because whatever happens will affect the entire globe. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe also there.
And I agree with Stellan, probably global north can stop financing these dictators, because they finance Putin and the war in Ukraine. They are financing dictators in Uganda, and they are using this money to repress people, to start wars, to do terrible things. So just energy, we need just energy transition, not just in Europe, but globally, of course. And we need to stop financing these dictators, because, for example, Europe stopped buying fossil fuels from Russia,
just found other ways to buy fossil fuels
from another dictatorship, from Azerbaijan, and they committed ethnic cleansing in Nagorno-Karabakh, and I am an ethnic Armenian, and it was so terrible for me to see this European hypocrisy, that they say, oh, we are not going to buy the gas from Putin because he is doing terrible things, and then they are buying gas and handshaking these other dictators which are committing, like, they committed ethnic cleansing just a few weeks ago. And there was no action to help these people who were affected. Now there are 100,000 refugees in Armenia, and there is almost no help from Europe.
Yeah, and exactly during the time when Germany took less gas from Russia, our chancellor was going to Africa to just like help build some new gas pipelines there instead of like maybe going there and taking some of the money that we would kind of be due because we're like in a really big historic responsibility, and maybe use this to further like green energy transition and bring also like wind energy there, solar energy, and like support this change already instead of supporting new gas pipelines. So yeah, thank you very much for that. So we're gonna switch to German now because Sheba said that English is okay, because she said before that she's learning German now and she's losing her English, but we're gonna try. But maybe we can also try it in German because I just prepared.
German.
We just said that I'm gonna read some of her quotes, that text that he wrote, that she wrote. So it's on. So she won't have to talk so much, but you can really well understand her in German. So you will see. Okay, Sheba, von dir würde ich gerne wissen, wie die Situation in der Türkei ist und wie du da die Möglichkeit von Protesten beschreibst. Und bevor du das vielleicht noch ein bisschen versuchen kannst auszuführen auf Deutsch, würde ich gerne ein Zitat vorlesen aus einem Text, den du schon während der Pandemie geschrieben hast und der mich auch sehr berührt hat. Du schreibst: Es fällt schwer, sich daran zu erinnern, auch wenn es noch nicht lange her ist. Nahezu in allen Ländern der Welt waren die unterdrückten breiten Massen, die Systemgegner, auf den Beinen. Aus Dutzenden, Hunderten von Gründen. Und alle Unterdrückten der Welt hatten begonnen, zusammenzukommen und sich zu vereinen, mit Hilfe gegenseitiger Solidarität Breschen in die in ihren kleinen Rahmen herrschenden Systeme zu schlagen. Diese Solidarität, dieses Aufbegehren, das hast du damals schon relativ früh in der Pandemie gesehen und kritisiert, ist durch die Pandemie auch wieder in den Rückzug geraten. Wie siehst du die Situation heute?
Ja, ist das okay? Ja, bevor Pandemie war der Zustand richtig sehr stark in alle Welt, Lateinamerika, Afrika, in der Türkei, oder alle raised up für environmental problems und Frauenproblems und so weiter. Aber während Pandemie plötzlich Isolation kommt. Und wir haben ein bisschen verloren. Wir müssen nochmal unsere Resistenzmethoden zurückbekommen. Und Solidarität ist sehr, sehr wichtig, wie du ausdrückst. Wir haben ein Globe. Und alle Verbindung hat. Und unser Land auch große Diktatorship geht. Jeder Protest Ergebnis ist Gefängnis für alle Leute. Und deswegen, aber trotzdem Leute versuchen zu finden, Lösungen, eine neue Wege zu finden, um starke Protest zu weitergehen. Kreativität ist sehr wichtig und Solidarität und dann wie heißt das Connection zwischen die Movements sind sehr wichtig. Und die Punkt ist, wir haben wir wissen, was ist das Problem da. Aber wir müssen auch eine Strategie haben, wie ökonomische Probleme, was ist der Grund von Klimaproblemen. Dann wir müssen gucken, unterschiedliche, vielfältige Gründe. Die Economic Investments und so weiter ist richtige, sehr große Grund. Dann wir müssen, ich denke, überlegen, den Minimalismus ganzen Ressourcen, okay, wir machen Solar anstatt Fuel, aber wenn wir Konsum so groß, ja. bis wo geht, dann ich denke, Lebensmodell, Lebenssystem muss wechseln. Und mehr Minimalismus wir müssen überlegen. Warum wir haben 20 Kleidung und 3 Auto, 3 Häuser und so weiter. Und Waffenproduktion. Wann solche Produkte immer noch investiert und dann keine Lösung. Deswegen economical wechseln die Ideas ist wichtig.
Und yeah, maybe just like one sharp. I'm going to have like one sentence in English. So what you said is that you can see that after the pandemic there are still problems that the protests won't really come back up as strong as they have been before, and also that you're missing some kind of solidarity. And what was also very important to you and also to Mathita was that we speak about like the climate impacts now, but we don't really speak where they come from and what we should change and have to change. And this is also something that you worked on a lot, like what are alternative models, how to live in a way that is really sustainable and that makes us just preserve our livelihoods and all the things that we live from. And maybe I found very interesting, du hast gesagt, dass wir kennen alle Lösungen, aber sie werden belächelt und ignoriert. Menschen nehmen die Lösungen nicht ernst und setzen sie nicht um. Und mich würde interessieren, ob du eine Idee hast, warum und vielleicht auch, wie sich das vielleicht doch noch ändern lässt.
Ja, das ist die Civilization kommt thousands of Jahren. Die wechselnde Idee, wechselnde Way of Looking dauert sehr lange. Weil wenn wir gucken, die Mythologie sagt sehr starke Punkt. Am Anfang war Gaia, ganzen Universum war bisschen zusammen. Und danach kommt die männliche Power, Zeus und Kronos und so. Dann kommt die Emperor und dann kommt die Staaten, dann kommt die Macht. Und wo ist unsere Natur? Ganzen thousands of thousands Jahres Geschichte bauen unsere Philosophie, unsere Lebenssystem. Dann weit weg von diesem System braucht andere Werte, über andere Werte überlegen. Was ist die Leben in Harmonie anstatt Sicherheit? Warum ich habe Angst von anderen unterschiedlichen Leuten? Und nicht nur Leuten, die Tieren oder Natur, warum habe ich Angst? Dann Tod und Leben, Tod und Lebenscircle ist anders. Wenn wir akzeptiert den Tod, dann wir können andere Meinung bauen oder entwickeln. Wir haben richtig große Arbeit, vielfältige Arbeit. Nicht nur heutige Ökonomik oder Klimaprobleme ein Teil von großem Bild. ein Teil von, wie können wir sagen, von...
Maybe you just like me.
Entschuldige mich, mein Englisch und Deutsch und alles weg in 5 Jahren.
Alles gut. Ich glaube, das war ganz gut. I think it's fine. I think at the end you probably also refer to something that Stella was saying before. Like, okay, on the one hand, we do have these ideas of what is strong and like how we use the earth, but also there had been ideas before of solidarity, of like how everything belongs together and stuff. So we could also like go back to this and learn from this and have our mindsets change to some way of working in solidarity here.
Yeah, naturally. Yeah. In the Türkei, we, in the kleine associations, we have kleine Gruppen gegründet in jede Regionen. Jede Regionen haben andere way of looking und Tradition. Und viele, viele Versammlungen gemacht mit alten Leuten, wie sie leben in Natur. Was ist die Landschaft, was ist die Produktion, was sie brauchen, wie sie produzieren und so weiter. Und dann die kleine Associations gegen große Massproduktion, dann sie haben anders gemacht oder yeah. resist yeah.
I think the point that you're trying to make here is that there are very, very many different small groups are working on their problems, but yeah. they are also very important because yeah. we can't just like take one thing and solve everything. But it's important to really support the small groups on the ground yeah. who yeah. work on the problems that are there. But you also highlighted when we talked before that these groups really need connection, they need yeah. support, because alone they can't really change the bigger picture, but yeah. like if they are working in solidarity and if they're working together and get support, this could also help. This is also something that I found in the things you just said, that we need more support. And I think it's really good yeah last point to my last question, because we're already coming to an end. And my last question to all of you is what would you say, like, what can individuals do? Because, yeah, sure, we need political change and we also need structural change, but we also see in the different countries that it won't just come along. So I want to make one last round. Maybe every one of you has, like, some things that, like, people can do to support the protests that are really, really important for the change.
Yeah. Probably you should just understand that these activists from different countries, they are human beings like you are, and they need your support, and you can just write nice things them on social media. You can send letters to political prisoners, which is also possible to do online. Yeah, you can do a lot of things. You just need to do your research and to understand whom you want to support, and there are a lot of ways to do that without spending any money. Yeah, so I think just it's really important to understand that these activists from dictatorships, they're just normal people. They do not want to go to prison. They do not want to fight these terrible regimes. They also want to have normal lives, but it's impossible for most of them. And you need to understand that we people who live in Europe, we are very, very privileged, and we need to use these privileges to help to more vulnerable people. And we can do that. There are a lot of ways to do that, and you have everything. Like in Germany, in Europe, you have a lot of like people from Turkey, Russia, Armenia. You can work with these activists to make difference in these countries, because it's a global crisis, yeah, and we need to do more work on an international level.
Thank you. Tobias, what would you add?
Yeah, so it was very depressing also, but also inspiring listening to you and your experience. And For me, honestly, it makes me angry when I listen to what you have to endure in your countries and how you're putting your lives at stake, your safety at stake. And in Germany and in many other European countries, we have governments that still don't act on this crisis and who keep silent, as you say, who can ignore, who still collaborate with dictators. It really makes me angry. And I think what we can do as individuals is get in touch with these feelings, feeling the anger, feeling the fear that we might also have, feeling maybe the guilt, feeling whatever is there, and transform that into action. So all of us, we have these feelings about this crisis, and often we suppress them because we can't deal with them in our day-to-day life, but it's so important to feel this and then realize, I, as a person, I can make a difference, and it's for me to act. I can do something. And what inspires me, for example, is just recently, it was not so much in the German media, but it was a big success of civil disobedience just recently in The Hague, two or three weeks back, where the people went to the streets again and again to the same place in The Hague, protesting for the government to have a look at its fossil subsidies. And they had this success that the government is now reviewing the subsidies. So it was a big success of civil disobedience. And we're going to do the same with Letzte Generation in Berlin this Saturday, actually, on 28th, occupy a big place. And it's not a movement. It's individual people who are doing this change. And this really motivates me. And for me, it's been like an empowering journey becoming an activist to realize that I, as a person, can do something. And everybody of us can bring about this change.
Thank you. Yeah, in Den Haag, it was activists from Extinction Rebellion blocking the motorway for 27 days in a row and just demanding that the subsidies for fossil fuels are being, closed down. Theda, is there something that people from here can do to, support protests in Myanmar?
Sure. I think I want to say two level, one institutional level and individual level, you know. So institutional level, of course, we do need to focus more on the government and some institutions to push. But for the individual level, we can still do more because we are one in all and all in one. So the way we taking care of ourselves in terms of consuming energy, part of the globe, it's also very important. So whatever we do, we need to aim both, you know, institutional level and the individual level. And yeah, not just the protest, but also the way of life. I really believe the way of life, individual person's way of life can make a big change if we all practicing at the same time in one direction, one aims. That's very important.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you can just like, I think we have the time. We're kind of approaching the end, but Stella, what would you say?
So I think that individuals in Germany, one must understand the issues because the issues in Russia, Myanmar, Uganda, Turkey, four countries out of all the world are different. So understand the issues for the different countries and then amplify them. Just amplify. And I think in terms of protests, some of the interesting responses I've found in Germany are from people who don't support climate justice activists and they laugh at them, I think, and they criticize them quite a lot. I think don't stand in the way of climate justice activists. If you don't understand what's happening and you don't see the relevance yourself, don't stand in the way of others who see the urgency. And if you can't support, at least don't block. Let climate justice activists do the work for you because the globe is our globe and it's one globe. Thank you.
Thank you, Stella. Shiba.
Ich sage nur ein Satz, sichtbar machen, ganzen kleine Bewegung, kleine Resistance, kleine, große und so weiter. Weil es gibt richtige, viele, viele, viele unterschiedliche Resistenzen und Modelle. Aber sie sind nicht aus dem Tisch. Dann wir müssen solche Lösungen sichtbar machen, auch. Yeah. Plus.
Thank you very much. Now we really have to come to an end, and I'd like to thank you as an audience for coming here to listening to this really important topic, but I really, really, really want to thank all on this panel for the amazing work that you do, and also for coming here and sharing your experiences and your thoughts. Just thank you. And I'd also like to thank the Kurt Wolf Foundation, on which stage we can sit and discuss all this. And I also want to thank again the Minister of State for Culture and Media, Claudia Roth, who's financing this program. And this program made it possible for more than 60 exiled writers to found refuge with PEN. So thanks for that again. Thanks for your attention. Have a nice afternoon.